From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studio. Today we're going to spend the bulk of the show talking about education, particularly a major transition in the La Crosse School District as outgoing Superintendent Randy Nelson hands over the reins to incoming Superintendent Aaron Engel. We'll talk to them. A little bit of baseball towards the end of the show as well. That's all coming up on Newsmakers. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm here now with Aaron Engel, who is the incoming Superintendent of the La Crosse School District. For the last several years, he's been the superintendent of the Galesville Electric Trempealeau School District. And also joining us today, Randy Nelson, the outgoing superintendent of the La Crosse School District. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today on Newsmakers.
You're welcome.
Happy to be here.
So the first question to you, Dr. Engel, what attracts you to a job like La Crosse superintendent?
I think the La Crosse School District has really stood out to me in my time as a superintendent in the region. I've been up the road just 30 miles away in the Galesville Trempealeau School District, and so I've always seen a lot of positive things out of the La Crosse School District. Some of the particular things that I'm really excited to be a part of are the community relationships that Randy has developed over the years with Gunderson and the Boys and Girls Club, the YWCA, just an incredible collaboration between the community and the school district. And then just the incredible resources that are present within the school district, a very thriving business community with development everywhere, a beautiful downtown that offers so many opportunities. And then the universities and the technical college that provide so many options for students and the residents. So I think there's just so many things that La Crosse has going for it that it's always been seen to me as an incredible opportunity.
How long were you at GET? Was your whole time there as superintendent, or did you grow out into administration from another position there?
So I was in the Galesville Trempealeau School District for 5 years as the superintendent. Prior to that, I was in the Auburndale School District as a principal.
And what kind of got you interested in teaching in the first place? What made you want to become an educator?
Both of my parents were teachers. My mom was a K-6 art teacher, and my dad was an elementary Title I teacher. So, you know, to a certain extent, you could say education runs in the family. I had initially went to college to pursue some other things, research and science, and it took a few years, but I got dragged back to education, and I've been very happy with that career choice ever since.
Kind of the family business, if you will.
Exactly.
So how long have you known Superintendent Nelson? I'm sure your paths have crossed as you've been in the area for several years.
Absolutely. We've known each other for 5 years now since I joined Galesville Trempealeau. We have what are called PAC meetings at in the region once a month. And so I've had an opportunity to observe Randy and learn from him and his experience. And so the conversations I've had over the years have, you know, really made me excited about what's going on in La Crosse. And I've always been impressed with his knowledge, understanding, and philosophy on education.
Superintendent Nelson, as you contemplated your retirement, not contemplated, but worked toward your retirement, were you part of the search process going on, or did you inform the board at all about your ideas of what kind of person might take over?
Actually, no. It's not very common that outgoing superintendents are hugely involved in that process, although it does happen at times. But in this particular case, in October, I announced my retirement to the Board of Education and our employees here in the district. And then not too long after that, the board started a process. Actually, they hired a consulting firm to help with that process. And those individuals did interviews with community members, with staff members, and based on that, actually outlined what people would want to see in their next superintendent. And based on that, process went forward. And here we have Dr. Aaron Engel as our next superintendent of schools, and I'm really happy about that.
And you answered my question before I asked it regarding your reaction to the hire of Superintendent Engel. But at what point in the process did you know that he was under consideration?
Well, I certainly knew that he was planning to apply. He had shared that with me just informally, that he was considering it while the position was still being posted. But then when I found out that he was turning into be one of the finalists, I was really excited about that because I think we had three solid finalists into that position. We had a lot of really strong candidates for the position, as far as I was aware anyway. But the three finalists were really strong, and just knowing Aaron and having had the opportunity to be a colleague of his here for the last 5 years as a regional superintendent meetings and connecting with him, I just know that based on what he believes, based on his experiences in the past, based on his own education and his own journey, that he will be a good fit for the school district of La Crosse, and he'll be able to take things, many of the things that we've been working on here, into the next level.
At the risk of sounding as though you're telling somebody how to do their job, what advice do you have, or what do you think is important for the superintendent's role going forward?
Well, you know, most of the things that we have been talking about, and Aaron and I have had several meetings now, just talking transition, and most of them are with regard to processes. He's been included in some of the processes that we've had to fill principal positions. He's been included in the discussions regarding SROs, discussions regarding the start of a new school year with us already. So we have incorporated him into many of the discussions that an incoming superintendent ought to be involved with, because these are situations that that individual is going to inherit. And he's done a nice job of inserting himself, you know, where it's when it's time to insert himself and provide his opinions and his feedback, his suggestions, and has been very, very helpful in that process. So there's a lot to know, but I will tell you that the experience that he's had at GET is solid. To me, if there's you know, if there's anything that's going to be new for him, it's the scope of coming into a larger school district. But I will tell you that education, for the most part, is education. We've got great individuals here, great community, and it's really going to be a matter of him ramping up, and he'll have no problem doing that.
You mentioned SROs. I just want to point out to our audience that stands for school resource officers, and we'll be talking about that conversation later on in the program. It's quite a topic of conversation across the country, and in this area is no exception. Superintendent Engel, let me ask you to maybe not compare your old experience with your new experience, but you've been in the role of superintendent for some time now. How do you anticipate this role being different? What challenges do you think it'll present as you come into La Crosse from Galesville Ettrick Trempealeau?
The La Crosse School District is about 7 times larger than the Gale Ettrick Trempealeau School District. You know, so that comes, you know, with additional demands. At the same time, it also comes with additional resources. You know, so there's more positions and people to help in making questions and answer questions and to get things done. As the superintendent in Gale Ettrick Trempealeau, I was the business manager for a while. I was the special education director for a while. Everyone wears multiple hats in a smaller school district. And so I think those experiences were very beneficial for me in understanding kind of the whole scope of what goes on in a school district. And so I look forward to bringing that experience and that knowledge to the La Crosse School District, but also knowing that I don't have to do those things, that there's good people in place who are going to take care of those functions, and my job will be to provide direction and support to help them accomplish their job to the best of their ability.
As you move into that sort of expanded leadership opportunity that may not come with as much hands-on opportunity as you've been used to, do you think that presents a challenge to you, or will you miss certain aspects of that, of the hands-on aspect of being involved more directly with programs, with students, that sort of thing?
I definitely will miss that to a certain extent. I enjoy the details. I enjoy learning. But I also really enjoy learning with others and collaborating with others. And so this will give me an opportunity to focus more on that aspect, the mentoring and coaching aspect, as it relates to the functions in the school district. I would also say that, you know, one of the things I wish I had had more time for as a superintendent in GET was the community relationships and the outreach portion. And I think that is something that Randy has really excelled at in the school district of La Crosse, and the partnerships that are present are just incredible. And so I'm really looking forward to getting into the details and the weeds there and expanding, you know, my experience in developing those relationships, maintaining those relationships, and creating new ones as we move forward.
So, Superintendent Nelson, talking about those partnerships, how have those partnerships in the community developed? What are some of those key relationships that are important to keeping the public school system vibrant in our community?
You know, I think the base of the work of superintendent is the fact that your schools are really your community, and your community are your schools. You're really inexplicably just you're intertwined, and so you can't do one without the other. And so I see every opportunity that we have to provide supports for our students, and in turn, we've been really excited, for instance, about our Health Science Academy, which is certainly has a strong partnership between Gunderson and Mayo and Western and Viterbo, as well as UWL, our students getting credits while they're still in high school, our teachers teaching alongside of teachers and doctors and things from other organizations. And so these are the kinds of things, providing these experiences for students is so important in a community that can do it. And what we have also found is that our partners, when we visit with them about what are your needs, what is it that we can do, how can we help support our students, how can we support you as students are working to find jobs and they're working to get themselves ready for post-secondary roles, how can we help you? And it's those things. The Health Science Academy came over a cup of coffee. It was a discussion that started with a cup of coffee 10 years ago, and now we have over 100 students enrolled in that, and it is it's an outstanding program. And it's that kind of relationship building and the connecting in the community that something I've always enjoyed doing. But I also think it's important to have a strong degree of dependence on the community outside of our schools are not just 15 buildings inside of our boundaries, inside of our geographical boundaries of the city. Our schools are a community, and we belong and we have to work together in order to be able to move forward together and to produce the graduates that we need in our community.
That's Superintendent Randy Nelson, who will be retiring as superintendent at the end of the month of La Crosse School District. We're also joined today on Newsmakers by Superintendent Aaron Engel, who will be assuming that position on July 1st. I appreciate both of our guests joining us today. Our conversation continues, including we'll find out about what the challenges of this year with COVID-19, with a statewide shutdown, have presented, and how those challenges are informing what's going into planning for the next school year. That's all coming up. If you'd like to get in touch with our program today, you can reach our show, find all of our contact information, send us an email or an idea for a future show. We would love to hear from you. Our website is wpr.org/newsmakers. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwestern Bureau in La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining us today. We're talking about the transition that is happening now in the La Crosse School District as one superintendent, Randy Nelson, is retiring. One superintendent, Aaron Engel, is assuming those responsibilities. Both gentlemen have been gracious enough to join us today for our program. And we've gotten a little bit of the blow-by-blow of Superintendent Engel's educational experience up to now as a professional. Superintendent Nelson, talk about your lengthy career in education, not just as a superintendent, but how you got started as a teacher.
Well, listen, I think your discussion on baseball later on in this program is going to be more interesting, Ezra, but I will say this. I will say that I started in 1983, and I was a high school teacher. I taught speech and theater, also English, directed plays, was a speech coach, I was a baseball coach, involved in a lot of things at the time. And then in about 1994, became a director of curriculum and instruction for several school districts in rural Minnesota, out in southwest Minnesota. And then in 1996, moved to Rochester, where I was recruited to be a coordinator for standards and assessments in the Rochester Public Schools. I was there for 12 years, and in 2008, I came here to the School District of La Crosse, and I was the associate superintendent of instruction under my mentor then, Jerry Kember. And then 3 years after I became the associate superintendent, Jerry decided to retire, and I applied for the position, and here I am, and it's 9 years later. It's gone by really fast.
Yeah, and what a way to wrap up a career when you look at the challenges that have faced schools across the state and really across the country and the world this year with the onset of COVID-19, with the spread of that virus around the world, and the potential dangers that it afforded our students and our teachers and their families. Superintendent Nelson, when in La Crosse, when was the first thought that schools might have to close their physical facilities?
You know, I think everyone was kind of noticing, at least I hope everyone was noticing what was happening in other parts of the world, and that this virus was posing problems. It was highly contagious, and that was a matter of time before it would reach the United States. And I think, inside of that, probably people were wondering, but it really wasn't until the day that the NBA, for instance, when they in the middle of a game, they just stopped a game and they said, "We're done. We're over. Clear the stadium. Our season is done." And then other major league sports followed as a result of that. And it was really started in some sort of a domino effect, and was really there, I think, when that started happening, that it became pretty real that this was going to impact our public schools in the same way, that we were going to have to quickly exercise the agility that we could to do something differently, to still provide school, but do it in just a little bit of a different way. And so it happened. It happened quickly. And I'm really proud of the work that we did during that time. We didn't start the year assuming that we were going to have to do that. As a matter of fact, we never go to any school year assuming that at some point we're going to have to shut down and just do remote learning. And I have to say that very few of us were prepared in the real manner of doing the curriculum, providing the instruction. It's different to do remote learning through instruction. It's different to run your curriculum when you do virtual and remote learning. And so we had to, in a matter of 5 or 6 days, had to get prepared to jump out, jump into a different environment, get many things ready to go for our students, and get our teachers prepared. And so as it turns out, our number one goal over the last several months has been to maintain contact with our students. That was a number one. Number two was to provide a strong semblance of remote learning and extending the learning that we had already had. But we also knew that what we were doing was so dynamic that it would not have been fair to just go ahead and grade all of our students in the same way, because the assessments couldn't be the same. The way we were doing things couldn't be identical. And so we felt it wasn't fair to do that. So we suspended our grading in the traditional sense, and went to a pass-fail system. In the meantime, we were working on procuring internet access for well over 100 students, maybe 200 students in the district who didn't have access. And so we're working with private companies, working with others and our public education foundation so that our students could have access, so that the devices that we have were usable at home. We didn't have devices for K-3, for instance, and so our teachers at K-3 were working on developing some packets of learning. And so I know that not only did we get thrust into a completely new environment, but our parents did as well. And so I think a lot of parents came to appreciate what our teachers do on a day-in and day-out basis. And I know a lot of parents were frustrated because there were times that they didn't know exactly how to navigate or how to work on something and how to help their child with that. So it was quite a unique experience moving forward. maybe Aaron would like to respond too, but that's in a nutshell the challenges that came with that.
Yeah, Superintendent Engel, what about Galesville Electric Trempealeau? How quickly did some of these plans have to come together there?
I think we had a very similar experience. You know, we were, I think, we had notification, that we would be shutting down our schools on like a Thursday, and it would be closed the next Wednesday. So we had about a week's worth of notice. And then things were rapidly developing, within 24 hours, the situation would change. And I know that our team got together on a Saturday morning and, what we thought would be a 2-hour meeting turned into an 8-hour meeting. And we had a plan put together as best we could, but it was really our principals and our teachers, adapting to the changing circumstances and doing the best job they possibly could.
So what kind of challenges did that experience present for you, Dr. Engel, in terms of distance learning, or not too much distance, but at least remote learning from the campus that have informed your process as an educator, or that you think you might be able to carry forward into your next experiences?
I think the thing that became clear to me was really focusing on students. I think that's always been the case, but at the end of the day, however we delivered our instruction, it was about student learning and what was most important. And I think there's a number of practices and procedures that we've used in education simply because we've always used them, and they all needed to kind of be reexamined in light of this global pandemic and how we were delivering education in an emergency remote status. And so I think as we move forward, whether we're using distance learning or not in the future, those practices and that critical reflection on whether or not they truly advance student learning, I think are some of the things that will stick with me as we move forward. Really, what's the bottom line? Our purpose is for students to be learning, and is what we're doing really reflecting that?
I don't want to put you on the spot too much, but is there something specific that you can point to? You mentioned practices that you perhaps at one time thought were an essential part of teaching that maybe this whole process and the reaction to COVID-19 has sort of shed a new light on it.
I think one that Randy has talked about, in one of his podcasts, with staff here in the school district, and that I've been having a long conversation with staff in multiple districts over many years, is homework. The grading of homework, which is meant to be practice, is can be a controversial subject. And I think in a situation like the one we just had, where students are at home with varying degrees of resources, with parents that may or may not be able to attend to their children, at any given time, an older sibling is watching younger children, if we're grading the homework that students are doing, it quickly becomes a reflection of the home environment, not necessarily what the student is capable of. So a longstanding tradition is, you send homework home, you're supposed to do it, you turn it back in, you get graded on that, and it affects your grade. And I think that this crisis has really elevated that discussion and really made it clear why it can be problematic to grade homework. You're not grading the child's understanding of the subject, you're grading the resources and access that they have at their home.
I know just anecdotally from talking to my friends and family who have been concerned with this issue for a long time, that homework has not just been a concern this year. It seems like in recent years, maybe the last 5 years or more, 10 years, the amount of homework that kids tend to get sent home with has made it to where some kids go home and spend as much time doing homework as they spent in school that day. What can be learned from what you were just talking about in terms of making sure that kids can have the repetition and the practice necessary to absorb those new skills and that new knowledge, but still have some semblance of a normal life outside of school?
Absolutely. We know that, distributed practice has a huge impact on student learning, and homework can definitely facilitate that process. at the same time, we need to be really conscientious about what we're sending home, why we're sending it home, how we're sending it home, you know, the expectations and support that we're going to provide around that. You know, done well, you know, a student might take a homework assignment and be, you know, incredibly engaged with it, and regardless of the circumstances, you know, be able to complete that and be able to come back the next day with a greater understanding of the subject. You know, at the end of the day, I would really just, you know, I would be thrilled if kids would go home and read for 20 minutes a night, you know, if nothing else. You know, we know that that would have a huge impact as well, you know. So I think it's really just important to really be thoughtful about what we're sending home and why, so that, you know, children have the best opportunity to come back and be successful.
Superintendent Nelson, maybe this is a better question for you, since Superintendent Engel hasn't been in the La Crosse School District yet, but in terms of the reaction of students, families, faculty, and others, how did your various constituencies react? How have they responded to the district's handling of COVID-19?
Well, you know, I think it would really be a mixed bag, to be honest with you. I think that you know, we had students who did not reengage as quickly as we would have wanted them to reengage, especially at the high school level, where credits and even graduation were on the line. And I think that in the environment, somehow, this notion that learning online and doing virtual school and et cetera is so easy, and that I don't have to be engaged. I don't have to be connected to that. And so that was a challenge moving forward. And as I mentioned, I think that some of our parents were challenged by the work themselves, especially, you know, helping their young children along the way. There's some new strategies in mathematics that are not consistent with the way I learned it, the way that other adults and parents have used it. But yet, in some of the new work that we're doing, we're helping kids. Sometimes how you do a math problem is just as important as obtaining the right answer, and that there are many ways to do a math problem, and sometimes the reading, same way. So I think that there was just a good, solid mixed bag of reaction and response from parents and students alike. What we know is that if we have to do this again, and I think we have to be prepared to do this again, if we have to do this again, we can't just do remote learning the way that we just did remote learning here in March, April, and May. That was really a stopgap measure that we established within a period of 3, 4, 5, 6 days to figure out how we're going to move forward, how do we stay in contact with kids. And so one of the things that we have been doing with Aaron's help and the help of other superintendents very closely nearby is just really working on some virtual options here over the summer, so that if and when that happens, we can provide a virtual option that will be a much stronger opportunity for students. Some of our students actually enjoyed the independence that comes along with being at home and getting their homework at home and being able to go online and do that when they did their homework. And by that, I mean some of our students, some of our middle school or high school students, for instance, are students that were not just at home, but they were also maybe doing their own daycare for their younger siblings because mom and dad were working. So it's a very complicated situation, and I know that we can turn it up a notch if and when it becomes time for us to do this again, and I think we're going to have to do it again.
I remember a few months ago when this first started, a friend of mine jokingly said that her children who had spent their entire academic careers learning about all the new methods of processing the various math conundrums that they're presented with are about to learn how to carry the one for the first time. And I remember thinking of how much things have changed since I was in school. Maybe the current situation reveals something that has been present for a while that maybe is important to address going forward. But Superintendent Engel, what happens now when you realize how far removed today's parents are from the methods used to teach certain things to kids? And how can you help to bring parents up to speed with some of those methods so they might be a more vital part of their kids' educational process?
Absolutely. I think one of the critical transitions over the last couple of years, and I think certainly as we move forward, is moving to family engagement you know, historically we've had family involvement. You know, we invite folks to open houses or we send out newsletters, bring them in for parent-teacher conferences. Oftentimes that involvement is, you know, it's one directional. It's the school, you know, giving stuff to parents. It's not a dialogue and an opportunity to learn about what your child's learning or how to help teach at home. And so I think we've been working at moving to a more of an engagement model where we're working with parents in different ways so that they can be more active participants in their child's education at home and have more involvement in the operations at school as well. And I know with the community schools that Randy's helped develop here in the school district of La Crosse, you know, some of those things are happening already. And so I really look to take that work on to the next step of continuing that family engagement so that parents feel connected enough to their schools and to the education of their child that, you know, when they get to that, you know, new way to do multiplication, they have some resources to call on, or maybe they've already heard about it a little bit. And so they feel comfortable helping their child or reaching out to find the right thing. I know I didn't sit in my daughter's class, but she brought home some homework and they were doing some third grade work, and it was on the basics of multiplication. And I know how to do multiplication one way. You know, you line up the numbers, you follow the routine and you complete the problem. She could do it in three different ways. And I was just flabbergasted at some of the novel ways she was thinking about mathematics, you know? So I think even from somebody who's been in education, like we need to do a better job of helping our parents be engaged with the work that their children are doing.
Is it accurate to say maybe we need to help parents find ways to remember that the problems that are sent home with their kids, the goal is not simply to arrive at the correct answer, but but to approach the thought processes from different perspectives?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the goals. I think, you know, when it comes to homework, too, we just need to be thoughtful about what we sent home. It should be within the child's scope of ability to complete that. If they have to rely on their parent to complete their homework, then, you know, we've maybe misjudged, you know, what we sent home that day. You know, so I think, you know, it's a large encompassing problem. You know, parents should be able to be engaged in motivating their child to approach the work, not in trying to find the solutions themselves.
That's Superintendent Aaron Engel, who will become the superintendent of La Crosse Public Schools coming up on July 1st. Also joining us today, Superintendent Randy Nelson, who will be retiring from that very position at the end of the month. I appreciate both gentlemen joining us. If you'd like to listen to this interview again or to catch any of our previous episodes, you can find our podcast. Just open your favorite podcast platform, search for Newsmakers, and subscribe. We would appreciate it. If you'd like to contact the show, you can do that from our website, and you can stream episodes on demand there as well. That's wpr.org/newsmakers. We'll ask about school resource officers, which is a conversation that's been in the news, coming up after this. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse. Thank you for joining us today. We're joined by Superintendent Randy Nelson and Superintendent Aaron Engel. Superintendent Nelson retiring from the La Crosse County School District, just as, not coincidentally, Superintendent Engel is set to take over there. Gentlemen, a few more minutes that we've got left in our conversation today, and I can't let it pass without talking about the topic that's been handled differently in different school districts, and that is school resource officers. I know the La Crosse County, the La Crosse School Board is set to address this issue at their next meeting, and they may or may not take action, but it is on the agenda to be discussed. So talk about just in La Crosse School District, Superintendent Nelson, up to now, what has been the relationship of the La Crosse schools with the police department and with school resource officers?
Well, right now we have, in the past year, we've had, I think, equivalent to 5.5 resource officers, if I'm not mistaken. And for the most part, we have one resource officer in each one of our secondary schools, in each one of those buildings. We've had what I would characterize as a good, amicable relationship with our local police department. We meet with them regularly. We discuss challenges. We discuss issues that do occur. We have been able to certainly, when we do run into emergency situations that occur in our schools, because of the relationships that we've built, we have pretty much instantaneous, lines of communication and connections with our SROs along the way. And so, I would say that we've had a strong experience with them. I think we have a good contract as far as contracts were to go. But I think, you know, what's really at stake here, and what really the fundamental question is, should we even have school resource officers? I think, you know, just about everyone is calling that question, not just in our local school district, but also across the state and certainly across the nation. But I think up to this point, we continue to have a good working relationship with our school resource officers and the work that they do. I would say that we've had school resource officers in place in La Crosse for at least 25 years, and so it certainly outdates me from when I came to the school district of La Crosse. And I can say that I don't know 25 years ago or whenever that was, you know, what the impetus was for installing or for having school resource officers in our schools. But I think what's really been important as during my tenure as superintendent is that if we're going to have resource officers, the number one priority should be for relationship building and connecting. We are a human being enterprise here. We've got 7,000 students in our schools, this connection that we need to make with students for all adults in the school, all adults in the community, is paramount for those students to feel comfortable and for those students to be positive learners. And I think therein lies one of the challenges and one of the rubs based on the, historical challenges, based on things that have happened, and certainly based on some of the most recent events that have taken place here within the last 2 months. It really calls the question, and it also, I think, makes people wonder, does the very presence of an officer in uniform in our schools, does it instill fear and or oppression for some of our students who have had bad experience or historically bad experiences along the way? And I think those are good fundamental questions for us to be asking and for us to evaluate how we might move forward with SROs in the future.
Superintendent Engel, what has your experience been with SROs? Is that something that's utilized by your previous school district? And what thoughts do you have about it coming into your new position in La Crosse?
I have not had the opportunity to work with an SRO in a school building in the previous districts I've worked with. When I was a principal, we had a police liaison with the county sheriff's department, and that was a very positive relationship. Regardless of whether we have SROs in the schools or not, we're going to need to have a good positive relationship with the police department. There are crimes that are committed on school property. There's truancy citations that we need to submit. There are safety considerations that will come up from time to time. We will need support from law enforcement. But I think the question really comes back to what Randy mentioned, is the relationships that students have and the feelings that they have as they're walking through the school. Do they feel safe and supported in that environment? And we want to examine any process or procedure that jeopardizes that.
So the school board is about to address this issue, and obviously whatever the board says goes. They're the ones who hire you collectively. They're your boss, as it were. Do you hope for any particular outcome from that discussion?
For me particularly, I want to investigate the issue closely. I want to talk to the people that are involved. We should talk to our principals. We should talk to the SROs themselves. We need to talk to our community partners. And most importantly, we need to talk to our students and our families. And in particular, we need to take this opportunity to elevate the voices of students that have been historically marginalized and maybe feel are particularly targeted, in some cases by law enforcement historically. So I want to use a good process to arrive at a good conclusion. And I think we can do that relatively quickly, all things considered.
Superintendent Aaron Engel, who will become the superintendent of La Crosse Schools on July 1st. Also with us today, Superintendent Randy Nelson, who is retiring after a distinguished career in education. Superintendent Engel, Superintendent Nelson, thank you both very much for joining us today on Newsmakers.
Thank you, Ezra.
Thank you so much.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you very much for joining us. We will be talking some baseball after this. It's about to be play ball at the Lumberyard. Joining us next will be Ben Kopanky, the general manager of the La Crosse Loggers. If you'd like to find more information about our program or to hear an interview again, to stream a show on demand, you can do that at our website. It's wpr.org/newsmakers. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From WPR in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our southwestern studios. Thank you very much for joining us today. It's just about time to play ball, or at least so say the La Crosse Loggers. We've been hearing this week about negotiations between Major League Baseball and its Players Association, and some people getting a little bit disgusted with millionaires deciding how many games they're going to be allowed to play over the course of the summer. Well, I tell you what, the Loggers are not millionaires, and yet they put on a product that would rival many experiences in professional baseball parks. And joining us to talk about it, Ben Kopanky, the general manager of the La Crosse Loggers. Ben, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Elizabeth. Thanks for having me.
Your season is starting very soon, and tell me what fans can expect to experience this season. It's a shortened season, but baseball nonetheless.
Exactly. I mean, it's been a long road for so many different people, so many different businesses, and especially in our community. The conversation changed by the day, but we are going to have a season here starting July 1st, and it's going to look different. It's going to look not like it has been in the past. The opponents, the number of games, some of the promotions are going to be different, food offerings, all those different things are up for conversation. But the main point and the one that really matters is baseball will be played, fans will be in attendance.
A lot of people, especially in the last couple of weeks with a pretty severe uptick in our area in the number of cases of COVID-19, are really interested in the safety precautions that exist at the businesses they support in the community. So talk about those discussions that you've had as an organization and what that's going to look like for fans.
Yeah, there were obviously very detailed conversations in our office that kind of led to this point. And obviously, like I said, the conversation changed. The narrative changed. The pandemic has changed over the course of 4 months. We were kind of protected here in La Crosse for a while, it seemed like, and now we're seeing some spike in numbers here and there. And so, we're kind of rolling with how this is being handled in our community. And we felt, the plan that we put together, we've had to make some tweaks and changes. But, one of the biggest things that we're doing at the ballpark this year is reducing capacity to our games. That was kind of the number one option for us, was to take our ballpark, which seats 3,000, and to start on July 1st or July 3rd when our home opener is, we're going to have 50% capacity to allow people to social distance within the stands as they see fit. At the same time, Ezra, we thought it was important too that if people did get together and want to hang out at a ballpark, you want to interact and enjoy the game as families or groups of people, we wouldn't want to prohibit them either. And so that's how we kind of wanted to go with that capacity, cutting it down to about 50%, making it more of a GA section in the ballpark so you can sit wherever you want to sit, wherever you're comfortable. That was one of the main safety precautions that we put in place. Obviously, things like mask coverings for our concession people, our ushers, ticket takers to start, that's important. I think that was a safety net that makes people feel a little more comfortable in the ballpark. More sanitation stations throughout the entire facility, and that was a no-brainer there as well. So, things like that we're putting in place. We're doing temp checks on our players and our staff, temp checks on fans as they're coming through. Doing everything we can to protect the facility, to protect the fans, the players, and at the same time understanding that there's an inherited risk that goes with anywhere, any place you go, whether it's a restaurant, a bar, grocery store. It doesn't matter. There's inherited risk everywhere. And we're going to do everything we can to make sure we're as safe as possible in 2020.
What about a lot of people wonder whether they're going to have to wear a mask or whether most of the people there will be wearing masks. Is there a requirement or even an encouragement among your patrons to wear a mask?
Definitely an encouragement. It's not something that we're going to require fans to wear. If they come to the ballpark and they're comfortable coming as is, if they see our COVID-19 readiness plan and they're comfortable coming, we feel, again, from a food safety side of things, we need to be doing these things for fan interactive personnel in the ballpark. We need to make sure we're wearing coverings on our side, but it's not something that will be required of fans.
So talk about back to baseball now. The team has been in lacrosse for quite a while now, and although these are college-age players, this is a summer league that exists for college students and people who might in the future pursue a professional baseball career, so they're not pros yet. But yep. talk about the legacy of some of the Lager's contributions to big league baseball over the years.
You know, it's been an incredible league, just going back in its history. And there's literally 30 other leagues across the country that are summer collegiate, where basically our players have to have college eligibility to play with us. They come from all across the country, and they play basically, it's almost like an internship to professional baseball. They come here, they hone their skills a little bit. They're playing with wood bats, major league rules. They're playing every single day, by and large, traveling in charter buses and trying to get that true minor league type experience while at the same time elevating their status as a soon-to-be professional. And we've had a lot of success with lacrosse. We've had players like Max Scherzer when he was a freshman at the University of Missouri in 2004 was a player for us. Chris Sale, who's with Florida Gulf Coast in 2008, came to us as a freshman that year. Matt Chapman with the Oakland A's was a Gold Glove winner, and Eric Thames, the former Milwaukee Brewer, was here in 2007. And so far in our history, we've had 20 guys that have gone out to Major League Baseball. We've had over 70 guys that are currently active in minor league baseball. And so this is really just a great opportunity to play in front of some scouts, play every single day, get their bodies ready, and get them to the next step.
When the guys come here, they're not being paid. Obviously, that would ruin their college eligibility. How do they find their way through lacrosse?
Well, over the years, as we enter our 18th year here in La Crosse, Wisconsin, it's been really about relationship building with the prospective school. So if we have a player that's from UCLA, we work very much hand-in-hand with that coaching staff to make sure that player is getting taken care of, fulfilling any requirements or needs that that player might have this summer as far as playing time and what the coaches would like to see him get better at. And so it's definitely about building relations and making them that player better when they go back to their school. So in turn, hopefully that makes that program better, and it just solidifies that relationship to where the school knows we're going to take care of that player, and the player knows we're going to make them better, and the school knows they're going to come back a better ball player. So it's really been, 18 years of building relationships over the years that has just gotten us comfortable with certain programs, and it's worked really, really well in our player development and getting these guys ready for pro baseball.
If some people are just not ready to come to the ballpark, are your games going to be on the radio again this year?
Well, we are actually going to be broadcasting online all our games this year for the first time.
Oh, okay.
So we are going to... If you go to lacrossewalkers.com, there'll be a listen live option, and that'll be free to listen to all the games. And then if you go to our website, there's also a watch now option, which is just a very, very well done production from the Northeast League, from HD cameras and four of them in every ballpark. And it's a very professional show. And so those are great options, either one. But lacrossewalkers.com will have all that info there.
And I suppose schedule and ticket information is there as well.
Yes, exactly. We do have the first 2 weeks of our schedule. We are expecting that the Northwest League will release the remainder part of the schedule here. Maybe even by the time this airs, or by early next week. So I think it's going to be just some great summer with some good games taking place here at Oakland. I do want to stress that too, that we understand there are people that are not quite comfortable and just not ready to jump into coming back to Lager games. And we totally understand that. We totally get it. And just know that when that time comes and it's right to come back and they feel comfortable, we're going to be here for them. We're going to welcome them. Like I said in the beginning, I think we can provide some sort of normalcy in what is just an upside down world right now. And we're looking forward to just getting back to the field, getting back to what we know best, and in the same time, doing it safely and making people feel safe.
It sounds good to me. Ben Kopanky is the general manager of the La Crosse Loggers. Ben, thanks a lot for your time today.
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you much for tuning in. If you'd like to hear this interview or our previous discussion with the school superintendents incoming and outgoing of La Crosse, or if you'd like to catch a previous program, you can do so on our website. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. Another way to find the show is to open your favorite podcast platform, search for Newsmakers, and hit subscribe. I would appreciate that very much. My producer is John Davis. Thank you very much, John. Please join us next week for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.